television nerds. My name is Anthony Marco, and welcome to TV ABCs, where we have conversations about Canadian television before cameras, before cuts, before channels, and explore how the people behind your favorite shows are being creative. This week, TVA's Greg David talks to Glenn Coburn. Along with the rest of the Meridian artist team, Glenn Coburn currently represents a select roster of some of Canada's most talented writers, directors, and producers. Glenn's career started in 1996 when he began working as a scriptwriter for New Line Cinema, an innovative artist agency. From 1997 through 99, Glenn worked as a creative executive at Templeton Productions' first look deal with New Line Cinema. In 1999, Glenn returned to Toronto and joined the Characters Talent Agency, where he ran the packaging department. Glenn also acted as executive producer on the feature film Young People Fucking, which premiered at the Toronto International Film Festival in 2007 and became one of the most successful and highest-grossing Canadian comedies of all time. Glenn's other professional activities include teaching the course The Business of Film and Television at Sheridan College, as well as being a board member for the Humber Comedy Program, and, as our own Greg David is about to find out, is also the founder of the Canadian Screenwriting Conference.
Okay, so let's start with a little bit of background of the Toronto Screenwriting Conference, and that's going to be running from Saturday, April the 30th to Sunday, May 1st. You're the founder of the conference. So when did it first start, and why was it important in your eyes to do it in the first place?
Well, I've loved screenwriting since film school, and I've been fortunate enough to build my career as a development exec and as an agent, working with screenwriters for the last 20 years. And I've always felt that part of the responsibility for that is to understand the world of screenwriters.
Right.
Now, I was also very fortunate at a very early age to realize I wasn't a screenwriter because I didn't have the disposition for it.
Yeah.
But I did think I had some insights into it. So I read every screenwriting book I could get my hands on, and I went to the various conferences around North America and, you know, saw all the usual speakers. But eventually there's kind of a diminishing returns on that. Because you've kind of heard every trick in every screenwriting book, and you've, you know, the screenwriting conferences that are out there largely are for beginners. They're largely 101 conferences,
right,
just kind of covering the basics of screenwriting.
Yeah.
And I'd been to a couple of things where I just felt I saw a speaker that wasn't really taking advantage of. I was excited to see someone speak, and then they didn't deliver. They talked more about their bio and their history and how they got an agent and who their first screenwriting teacher was, all those kinds of things, none of which I cared about, mm-hmm, because I could find all that on the internet if
right.
I wanted. I wanted to know what was in that writer's brain.
Yeah.
And every now and then I would still read a screenwriting book and still come across that nugget inside a screenwriting book and be like, oh, that's so great. I wish there was some way to get that out to a larger public.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, it all kind of formulated in my brain that maybe there just needed to be a master's level screenwriting conference. You know, if you think about it, if you make bolts for cars in Detroit, there is a conference for you somewhere in the world once a year,
right,
to go figure out how to make better bolts.
Yeah.
And yet here we are, a group of artists who are making their living screenwriting, and there's nowhere for them to go to talk to other screenwriters and figure out what other screenwriters are doing on other shows. And even though there are podcasts and things like that that are going on now, that's still very solitary, where you're sitting at home alone or on
right.
a bus listening to these things, as opposed to being surrounded by professional screenwriters.
Mm-hmm.
And so the idea was to create a master's level professional screenwriting conference. And when I looked into it, it doesn't exist in the world.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't exist anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And so from day one, the tagline for the conference has been for professional screenwriters and the people who work with them. And the idea was to bring in all the professional screenwriters, all the directors, all the producers who were working with them, and try to elevate the conversation on story. And finding out what they're doing on story in Denmark, find out what they're doing in LA, find out what they're doing in Toronto, and have all those people in one place to discuss that,
mm-hmm,
and have some sort of interaction so that we could all become better screenwriters as part of the process.
So, you know, talking about that, you know, kind of everybody collaborating, you know, and different writers from around the world, where does Canada stand? Where do you think Canada stands in that list? Like, how do we compare with other countries around the world? Not specifically just the U.S., but say Denmark and England and countries like that.
I always hesitate to compare national entertainment industries because everything's built in a certain set of circumstances.
Right.
You know, one of the big circumstances in Canada is we have talent ranks. So some of our best end up leaving for Los Angeles, whereas
right.
Denmark probably doesn't have that problem. The
right.
best in Denmark are staying in Denmark.
Right, right.
At the same time, they only can make so many TV shows. We're making far more TV shows than they are, and so they possibly have to take more of a risk to kind of rise to the top. I don't know exactly the dynamic
yeah.
of every nation. What I can tell you is the state of screenwriting in Canada is very strong. There is a lot of great, talented writers who have stayed in this country, mm-hmm. who are continuing to write world-class television, and when you go to markets like MIP or you're down in Los Angeles, they've heard of Canadian shows, they know who the people are who are working on them. It has a very large international presence, and not just because we're making it, but because people are watching it, people are enjoying it, they have fan bases. And I think there's a real opportunity right now with the internet and streaming and all these other services for Canadian shows to find larger audiences around the world. We don't have to depend on the original, channels that existed in the past. We can actually find bigger audiences around the world through different services.
Yeah,
I think it's very strong, and it keeps getting stronger. I think we keep on making better and better programming here.
I mean, Netflix is a key example. I mean, they're such a big player all of a sudden. You have a show like Degrassi that's airing on Family Channel here in Canada, yeah. but Netflix around the world. I mean, that's crazy. It just opens so many more doors.
Absolutely. Yeah. And to be able to just do a deal where Degrassi is just now on Netflix everywhere is also important because now people know where to find Degrassi.
Right.
Whereas, I don't know exactly the situation before, but it was on different networks and in a lot of different places.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I mean, I think for the first time in a long time, we can talk about shows of the last 5 years that all have brand names that are recognized internationally.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And we're still making great Canadian programs that are specifically Canadian that lots of Canadians are watching.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, there's lots of reason to be excited. We tend to talk a lot about our failures and our difficulties and our challenges here. I don't think we celebrate our successes enough. And I've never seen the numbers worked out, but at least in my kind of very superficial analysis of it, I think our batting average is way higher than many countries.
Mm-hmm.
And in that sense, I think we're doing a great job.
So has there been kind of a mandate for the conference that you guys you set up and that you've tried to stick to through the years?
Sticking to the mandate to the conference is probably one of the single largest challenges of the conference. Because, again, as we talk about working with professional screenwriters and the people that work with them,
mm-hmm.
that event doesn't exist in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And most professional screenwriters have been to a lot of the beginning-level screenwriting conferences. So you maybe go to one when you're first trying to get it started, but at the time you've worked on a show for 2 or 3 years and you sold your first screenplay or your first 2 screenplays, now you go back to that conference, it all seems very basic.
Right.
You're not learning new things. And so even people that wanted to engage in education, I think, got burned by a couple of those conferences, and then everyone kind of decided, oh, you know what, we're just going to move away from screenwriting education altogether. So in building a new event, you know, whenever I would talk to people about it, they would say, oh, you know what's wrong with the Toronto Screenwriting Conference? You don't have a pitch fest. And I say, that is entirely by design.
Mm-hmm.
We do not want to have a pitch fest mm-hmm. because a pitch fest where junior writers come and talk to executives and pitch their shows. That to me is a selling of hope, that mm-hmm. is a selling of access, that is a selling of other things
right.
that other conferences do, and other conferences do very well. There's no reason for us to have to do that.
Mm-hmm.
We want people to come and just engage in a master's level conversation. So a couple of guidelines that we would kind of use. One, we never, almost never talk about the bio.
Right.
There might be a quick 30 seconds on it, but for the most part, we expect that if you're coming to see Glenn Mazzara speak,
mm-hmm.
you've looked him up on IMDb, you know what his resume
right.
is, you've read his background. He doesn't have to stand there for 10 minutes and tell you where he grew up and what his dad did for a living,
yeah.
and how that, you know, that's all there. We just want them to launch right into it. It's basically 90 minutes to get as much out of Glenn Mazzara's brain as we possibly can. One of my favorite examples of this is Leonard Dick came up 2 years ago, and he sat down, and instead of kind of covering his bio out of the gate,
mm-hmm.
instead of covering how he got his first agent, or you know where he learned about screenplay structure, he spent the first 20 minutes comparing 3 of the writer's rooms that he'd been in. He'd been in the Lost room, he'd been in the House room, and he'd been in the Good Wife room.
Right.
And for most writers, you've been in one room, you think, okay, that is how a room works. You get
right.
in the second room, you realize, oh, that's how that works. And eventually
right.
you realize every writing room works differently.
Yeah.
And this was an opportunity to find out how Lost worked and
mm-hmm.
how House worked. And they were extremely variant opportunities. David Shore wanted a specific thing out of his room. He built his room to get that out of it.
Mm-hmm.
And that kind of conversation you're not going to get at a conference where they're still trying to explain what a first act is.
Right.
And so following that, pursuing that, and staying on target for that has been very, very difficult. We brief our speakers for it. We brief our moderators for it. We try to make sure the audience understands that that's what we're doing.
Mm-hmm.
We hope that the question's coming from the audience. are always going to be at an upper level.
Right.
We never want to hear the question, how do I get an agent coming out of the audience?
Right.
Because ideally, most of the writers have agents in the audience. But then, so there's it, the two challenges are, one, staying on target for that, but then also at the same time, you know, making sure people come to the event and we deliver that.
Mm-hmm.
And when we deliver that, that's when we find success, because those people who have been burned before by attending too many beginning level conferences finally come and go, aha, this is where I'm getting some real education. And then the word spreads.
So that said, can a beginner come down to this and learn something, or are you advising that it should be more veteran and have some experience before showing up?
It's a tough question, because
yeah.
I never want to discourage anyone from engaging in education.
Right.
It is not the market that we're after.
Okay.
So it's a difficult question in the sense that if you're aware of the Toronto Screenwriting Conference, you probably have dipped your toe pretty far into the water already, and maybe you've started to develop some skills.
Mm-hmm.
But as an example, we don't advertise in Now Magazine that the Screenwriting Conference goes on, because we don't want the people who are all fans of The Walking Dead with Glenn Mazzara or any of the other shows coming just because they're a fan of the show and they want to see the person who's writing it.
Right.
We want people who come who are serious about screenwriting. So, yeah, we actually do, you know, we have kind of an arrangement with some of the film schools so they can send some of their students, mm-hmm. kind of their best students. But when we go to them, we say, you know, we'd like to offer a discount to five of your top students, mm-hmm. and we let the schools pick who those students are, mm-hmm. so that they can come, as opposed to, again, leaving it wide open.
Right.
I do think if you have not read a screenwriting book, if you have not studied screenwriting or listened to a lot of podcasts or starting to put yourself into it, I think a lot of the conference would go over your head.
Mm-hmm.
You might be absorbed to some things, but you know, as they talk about the first act or the second act or what's happening in the tag or tease, or you know, and they kind of go over some of the things that you've learned and are assumed and what a writer's room is, all those kinds of things that just
yeah.
writers talk about every day, you're just going to be a little lost. And it's not that we don't want you there. We also don't want to take your money and not deliver
right.
what we want you to have. And so I would say, if you've read some screenwriting books, if you've written some screenplays, written some spec pilots, you've done that kind of work, absolutely. Mm-hmm. You're not necessarily a professional screenwriter yet, but you're also not a beginner who's just looking to dip your toe into the water for the first time.
Okay.
So beginners welcome, but also just be aware of what you're coming to. It's a little bit like coming to a conference on mutual funds, but you haven't learned anything about business
right.
yet.
Right, right. Well, what was interesting to me last year was going there, and it was packed. I mean, there were people that couldn't get into some of the sessions because it was so, you know, they had such a large group of people. And as I noticed, a lot of them were veterans, like faces that I recognized, people that are established in the industry. So obviously they're there. It's a never-ending education, learning to write for television and for film, right? It's not like you can just say, oh, I've done it a few times, I've been on a couple of shows, I've learned all I can.
Right.
That isn't the case. People are coming out to this weekend for an education, and I'm assuming to network a little bit as well, right?
To network, for sure.
Yeah.
I mean, I think the veteran screenwriters are probably the people who come and are the most surprised by the Toronto Screenwriting Conference.
Okay.
Again, they've been burned in the past. They think they've learned everything.
Yeah.
But, you know, at the end of the day, everybody has something that they've learned that they can pass on. Mm-hmm. And I haven't been in a single session. You know, I'll give one of my favorite stories about, we had David Goyer up last year.
Yeah.
And I had a veteran screenwriter come up to me afterwards, because David Goyer had said that he and Chris Nolan had really struggled in writing the Batman Begins. It took them a while to figure out how it was.
Yeah.
And the veteran screenwriter came up to me and was like, they struggled. That was just such a great thing to hear.
Yeah.
That David Goyer and Chris Nolan didn't know exactly what Batman Begins was.
Right.
And so even if it's things like that, about learning about what other veteran screenwriters are going through, and then screenwriters don't just kind of dump themselves on the page. Or something that's thrown out, you know, just a tip. I mean, Michael Arndt came up and did a lecture that was mind-blowing, and I remember at one point kind of separating myself from the lecture and looking around the auditorium, and I just saw all these veteran screenwriters and producers and story editors and directors just engaged
mm-hmm.
with every word that was coming out of his mouth
mm-hmm.
because there was so much great education in it. And so, yeah, I think those people are the most surprised when they kind of see the value that they're going to get out of the conference. Did that answer your question?
Yeah, okay. Absolutely.
I want to make sure I answer your question.
No. So let's talk about some of the sessions that are featured at the 2016 conference. Now, screenwriter Corey Mandel was popular last year. I tried to get into his session, but it just people weren't getting into that one. Can you? He's going to be taking part in the creating a successful TV series engine session.
Yeah.
So what can you give us a little bit of a tease into what that session is going to be about and what people are going to walk away with?
Corey has been a great friend of the conference. We actually did an Annex session. We did our first TSC Annex with him between 2015 and 2016.
Okay.
He was back here in the fall, and we signed up, I think about 40 people came for a full weekend with Corey.
Wow.
Because he had been so successful at the 2015 conference.
Yeah.
He's coming back. He's actually doing two lectures this time. What can they expect to get out of it? What they can expect to get out of it is by no means a formula. Mm-hmm. To build a TV series. Mm-hmm. But at least some mechanics on the way in on how to build a TV series. I can't tell you the number of people that came up to me after his lecture last year that were just blown away.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of those things where there is a huge difference between screenwriting and creation. You know, the creation of a story, the creation of the universe, the creation of the characters, how they all map out on each other, how they interact with each other, is certainly executed through a screenplay.
Mm-hmm.
But I think what Corey's done a great job of doing is saying there's a whole process before the screenplay, before the outline, of just figuring out how those elements work together.
Mm-hmm.
And he's given people a great number of tools on how to figure that out and to just have some sort of framework by which they can start putting elements in. Whether or not you break that framework, you move away from it, to me, it's always like building a canvas for painting. He's
mm-hmm.
he's just got some tools on how to build the canvas, regardless of how you're going to paint on it.
So how important was it to get him back for 2016? Like, has he got like a standing invitation?
I like to think most of our successful speakers always have standing
invitations. Yeah.
Certainly, we got complaints about people not being able to get into a session last year.
Right.
On one hand, I love getting those complaints.
Sure.
Because the sessions were very full.
Right.
But on the other hand, we want to make sure that people have the chance to learn from Corey. So that's why we brought him back for two sessions this year.
Okay.
And hopefully, he's got a lot of things to talk about. He's got a lot of education to give. And I think, you know, everything he does is a world-class level. And he's just so smart at what he does. And he's so professional. And he's so... articulate in the ideas that he's conveying.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, I mean, if Corey wants to come back, we'll always have him back whenever we can.
Talking about people not being able to get into his session last year, is that part of the reason why you're at the convention center downtown this year? Because it's kind of, you've got the opportunity to have some bigger theaters and bigger rooms?
We've definitely moved to the convention center. One of the big reasons was bigger rooms.
Yeah.
We're expecting attendance to go up a lot this year. I'm not sure how many people have put this together or not, but we worked very closely with the Writers Guild of Canada this year.
Yes.
So we've kind of created this writing super weekend,
mm-hmm.
where the Toronto Screenwriting Conference will be Saturday and Sunday, and the Writers Guild Awards are going to be on Monday. So for those people across the country who weren't necessarily going to come for the Screenwriting Conference or the Writers Guild Awards, maybe now will come because both are within 3 days of each other.
Right.
So we expect a lot. I mean, actually, but not only expect, the numbers are already up.
Mm-hmm.
We're already getting more communication from both coasts. So we needed bigger venues regardless,
mm-hmm.
but because we would also manage to move the dates, we expect there to be kind of an exponential increase in attendance.
Right.
The funny thing for us is... We can't do a conference in a venue that holds the entire conference at the same time in two different rooms.
Right.
So what happened with Corey last year
was
unfortunate, but to me it just spoke to how strong our programming was. And, you know, the truth that I don't think anyone really realizes is had we actually flipped the rooms,
mm-hmm.
we would have had the same problem,
mm-hmm.
you know, because of the way that the numbers worked out. And that to me is actually more about how well programmed the conference is. We're never going to have a great speaker up against something you don't really want
right,
to see.
Right, right.
There's always going to be a tough choice.
Yes.
And I know it's probably frustrating for some people, but that is really, we always want to make sure it's a tough choice for people to
mm-hmm.
figure out which speaker to go see. And we know people who split their friends up and they each take notes and all this kind of stuff. I will say we've had lots of feedback about why don't we record them, why don't we podcast them. We're looking into all of that stuff. A lot of the talks have rights issues.
Right.
that are difficult for us to get by and mm-hmm. jack up the price of the conference a lot.
Right.
So it's a fine line between being able to kind of say, oh, you can go to session A and then get session B online later, because the rights behind recording all the sessions
sure.
are difficult. We're working on it, but we'll get there. yeah. But that was, you know.
That's a good problem to have.
It's a good problem to have. And again, we're only in our seventh year. We're writing these things out as we go.
So let's talk a little bit about Jen Grisanti. She's a TV executive turned story consultant and writing instructor. And she's going to be part of the session called Writing a TV Pilot That Sells. Pretty self-explanatory by the title, but still.
So here's what's... So I've heard about Jen for years.
Yeah.
I've never met her. I've heard about her for years. I've heard rave reviews about her for years. She is one session you will find me in the back corner taking notes of that one, because I'm so excited that she's coming. One of the things that I love about her session and what she told us she was going to teach is the selling part of it.
Mm.
You know, there's a very... real aspect of screenwriting, which is art,
mm-hmm.
and people wanting to get their voice out there and people wanting to have their message put out and the things that they want to talk about. But there's also a real aspect of business.
Right.
And, you know, as a manager of talent, you have to kind of always figure out what are we pursuing. We're pursuing business and art. And sometimes they come together.
Mm-hmm.
Every now and then a screenwriter gets to be as lucky as Vince Gilligan and have the biggest show on the planet, which is also a phenomenal piece of art. But other screenwriters just want to sell something. They just want to kind of get their foot in the game. And they've staffed on a lot of things. They don't know actually how to generate a pilot that sells.
Mm-hmm.
That's why we brought Jen up, is because we thought it would be good to have someone who came up to say, this is a commercial enterprise, and you should acknowledge that it's a commercial enterprise. And if you do, these are some of the things you should consider. All kind of mapped on top of what Corey's going to do. Corey's going to tell you how to write a pilot.
Right.
Jen's going to tell you how to sell it.
Right.
You can make those choices as you go. Again, we're not trying to build a framework. We're just trying to give people options.
Mm-hmm.
So you can build the artistic pilot through Corey, then you know, and just want to put that art out in the world. Or you can map Jen on top of it and realize, oh, I should really make a couple of changes and make it more sellable.
If you're a writer in this country, do you need an agent to begin with?
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely, right? Okay.
You do need an agent, for sure. Agents are, I am an agent, full disclosure for
right.
those who don't know, I am an agent. They're an important part of the process. I mean, I think they are, what I would say is writers should be focused on the craft.
Mm.
You know, yes, they should engage in the business. Yes, they should take lunches. Yes, they should have coffees. They should go to the Writers Guild Awards. They should go to the TSC, all those kinds of things. But they should be spending a vast majority of their time just being creative. And leave all the business stuff to the agents. I'll tell you one thing that happens in this country, I think, a lot. Is I think struggling screenwriters write a screenplay. Let's stay in the world of feature film. They
yeah.
write a screenplay, and they send it to a bunch of agents that don't get representation.
Mm-hmm.
And then no one really criticizes the screenplay. They all go, thank you very much, we liked it, but unfortunately we can't represent that screenplay right now. And then the writer changes their focus and becomes a producer.
Mm-hmm.
And they just keep trying to sell that screenplay. And next thing you know, it's been 3 or 4 years, they can't get that screenplay off the ground, and so they have to put their mind to another screenplay.
Right.
With an agent, you don't have to worry about all that business
mm-hmm.
stuff. You write a screenplay, it's great, the agent then tries to sell it while you go on and work on your other project. So the step before that to me would be, if you can't get an agent with your screenplay, then you should immediately put that screenplay on the shelf and write another screenplay to try and get an agent. And keep
okay.
writing screenplays until you get an agent, because the agent is the gateway to the business.
Right, okay.
Now, it's the entertainment business.
Yeah.
So I'm not going to tell you that some writer who wrote their first screenplay who couldn't get an agent is not going to get their movie produced, because anything can happen in entertainment,
yeah.
and I guarantee that will happen to someone.
Right.
But it is not the right way to build and manage a career.
Okay.
On one screenplay. You need to write multiple screenplays. And I think if you can't get an agent with your first, good on you. You finished a screenplay.
Right.
You know, as we like to say around here, everyone's writing a screenplay, but
yeah.
very few people have finished one.
Right, right.
So if you finished one, put it on the shelf. Go write a second one, try to get an agent again.
Okay.
Put it on the shelf. Try to get an agent, you know. And eventually, you'll force yourself. There's a pressure to finding an agent.
Mm-hmm.
I like that pressure.
Mm-hmm.
I think screenwriting needs that pressure sometimes to force people to try new things and jump off a cliff. A lot of screenwriting is literally just taking chances and trying to do something new and different. And you find that out when you need to start making choices that are going to make you stand out from the other screenwriters.
Right, right. Okay. Okay, so let's get back to the TSC. You know, anti-heroes. People have loved them ever since. You know, Tony Soprano for some, Vic Mackey for others. I mean, The Shield was just mind-blowing for me.
Well, let's just stop right there.
Okay.
Because The Shield, in my mind, is the best TV series
okay,
of the last
excellent.
15 years.
Right on.
Not enough people talk about The Shield. So you and I will make sure everyone watches The Shield.
Yeah.
No one, if you've been listening to this podcast and you have not watched The Shield, you will not be disappointed.
Pause the podcast.
Go watch 7 seasons of television. It won't really take you that long because it's that good. And Vic Mackey is one of the greatest television characters of all time.
Yes.
As far as I'm concerned.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
All right. And continue.
Yes. So, you know, the anti-hero, you know, Glenn Mazzara, we've already mentioned him a couple of times. He's worked on The Walking Dead, and he's currently the creator, executive producer, and showrunner of Damien on A&E. Now, Glenn is going to be talking about the history of the anti-hero. We love to watch them on TV, don't we? The anti-hero.
Yeah. The anti-hero is someone, you know, I'm very curious to hear what Glenn's talk is going to be and how he kind of plays it out. There was a TV show called Power on Fox,
yep.
Predated The Shield and predated Sopranos, with an anti-hero that tanked incredibly fast. I think they only aired 8 of the 13 episodes. But it was amazing for us who had, you know, been living in this world of a hero, 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 hero. I think TV has wanted an anti-hero for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
I think Sean Ryan and David Chase did such a great job of putting characters on screen that we could relate to. The construction of an anti-hero, that's the thing that Glenn Mazzara is unbelievably great at. And that's the thing that I'm excited about. I do know, you know, like, you look at Walking Dead, and I'm a huge fan of The Walking Dead. And I was not a huge fan of the first season.
Interesting. Okay.
And then Glenn Mazzara took over in the second and third season. And to me, that's where that show really started to cook. Now, I know some people think The Farm was too slow and all that kind of stuff. But I look back on The Farm now.
Right.
And The Farm was totally necessary because we need to know who those people were.
Mm-hmm.
And Frank Darabont started on The Farm and got fired at some point in the middle. I don't exactly know what the timing is.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But you look at what they did while they were on The Farm, what Glenn did as he showran the show through The Farm.
Right.
Those are still the characters you care about the most, aren't they?
That is true. Yeah, as you were saying, and I'm thinking he's right. Yeah. There might not have been a lot going on action-wise, but that was all about character building and caring about those people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the moral ethical choices, and more importantly, I think the moral ethical foundations of those characters that are going to allow them to make those choices.
Right.
So Glenn Mazzara talking about that stuff to me is just insight into one of the great minds at understanding an anti-hero, because they are, in my mind, probably the most complicated characters to try and build and find empathy with. You know, again, the thing but this is not a spoiler alert at all about The Shield, because I won't tell you anything, except to say that I got to the end of The Shield, literally the final act of The Shield after 7 seasons, around the season series finale, final act's about to begin. I paused the TV and I turned to my wife and I said, I have no idea how I want this to end.
Yeah. Yeah.
I still hadn't made up my mind about Vic Mackey.
Right.
That kind of stuff is unbelievable. When you can pull off that kind of writing and keep your audience guessing, or keep your audience off guard emotionally and off balance, that to me is incredible. And Glenn has insights into all that stuff, so I'm excited to hear him talk about it.
And he's also doing a session on Damien specifically, right?
Damien specifically, which will be much more specific to that show. So there'll be a big, broader lecture about the anti-hero.
Right.
And then I think a lot of that will be applied to how he built Damien.
Stephen Falk. Now, I don't know a heck of a lot about him, but he's doing Breaking a Season, and there's going to be executive interview with the executive with Nicole Clemens from FX. She's executive vice president over there, and you also mentioned earlier Corey Mandel is doing the second session that's going to involve making your script stronger. So, by the time that this whole weekend is done, what can people expect? What can attendees expect to walk away with in the toolbox?
So, number one, inspiration.
Okay.
We hear it all the time. It is the single largest comment we get back, that people who were stuck, people who have been floundering, people who didn't know what their next thing was, just walk away feeling completely inspired.
Because just to cut in for a second, because even though you could be in a writer's room with a bunch of people, writing is very much a solitary thing. And it's easy to get down on yourself and think, this is crap. Nobody likes this stuff. Yeah. What I'm doing is wrong. I'm spinning my wheels. Yeah. Right?
Absolutely.
Yeah, okay.
And whether or not it's a idea, whether or not it's a framework, whether or not it's hearing what has worked and what hasn't worked, whether or not it's hearing about something that someone else tried, mm-hmm. all of those things just help people get past obstacles in writing. And so, you know, again, I'm not a screenwriter. I just wanted to provide a education for screenwriters and the people who work with them. I consider myself to be obviously one of the people who works with professional screenwriters, and I see the problems that we face in screenwriting, and I see the solutions painting themselves on the screens as we have these conversations. Mm-hmm. And whether or not it's hearing from someone like Nicole, who is in charge of the development slate at a network that is developing some of the most exciting programming in television, of course Nicole is going to have great insight in how to do that and what she looks for in a TV series and how FX develops those things. That's going to be incredibly insightful. Stephen Falk understanding how a season breaks. You know, knowing someone, hearing from someone who has had the opportunity to do that multiple times, obviously he's learned a thing or two about it. Mm-hmm. And again, it's one of those things where you talk about the screenwriting books and the conferences and all that. You know, I still think people should do that. I still think professional screenwriters should do that. But what's most valuable is the stuff that's in the brains of the people who maybe don't have time to write a book. And that's what the TSC is going to pull out. We're going to give you all those thoughts and all those things that you wouldn't have a chance to get otherwise. Mm-hmm. So, all right, so to answer your question, I keep it over.
That's all right.
The inspiration, number one. Number two, I honestly believe most people will leave with some sort of skill.
Okay.
They'll have developed something in a new context, a new way to approach character, a new way to approach building a story, a new way to approach building a universe. Mm-hmm. We haven't announced yet, but we are going to do another sessions coming up this year that doesn't have anything to do with film or TV.
Okay.
But it's about building story in another media.
Okay.
And even then, I've read, you know, a lot about that lecture already, and the way they approach story inevitably is going to be able to feed back to film and television. They're doing things, they're discovering things that we're going to be able to put into film and TV. And so I think people definitely come away with skills. People will definitely come away with new friends, new colleagues, new people to work with. In the last year, I have bumped into a writer-director team who met at the TSC. I know a producer who's developing something at a network that they met at the TSC. I know friends. I know writers groups have come together out of the TSC.
Oh, okay.
All kinds of... It's a chance to be in a room and a venue for 2 days with people whose interests are completely aligned with yours.
Yeah.
You know, you're obviously going to meet other people. You're obviously going to have a chance to network. Even if you only know 3 or 4 people that are coming, they probably know 4 or 5 people. Inevitably, you end up leaving having met 20 more people in the industry.
Right.
And, you know, and you have more avenues, more readers, more people to talk to, more ideas to listen to. So I think people definitely get that. And what else would they get? I think those are the 3 big things.
Okay. What about food trucks? Will there be food trucks now?
There are no food trucks. It's so funny you ask that because I just found that out this morning. Because of the change in venue, A, parking on Front Street, difficult.
Yeah. Yes.
And B, there are already food trucks. And C, there are tons of restaurants around the country. I will tell you that we have done a deal with almost every restaurant in the neighborhood. So a TSC badge will get people a discounted lunch.
Oh, there you go. So right on.
All good.
Excellent.
But bring snacks.
Yes.
Yeah. You're sitting in a room, but bring a snack.
One of the other interesting things, and I attended last year and saw what ended up, you know, the writer's intensive that they did, that you guys did with Bruce Smith from 19-2.
Yeah.
So I got to see the end product. Now, at the time that this podcast is going up, the deadline is already passed for the writer's intensive this year with Emily Andrus. But talk about what the people that are going into this, you know, this is a writer's intensive. This is from, I think, 10 a.m. until 4 in the afternoon. These people are going to be ensconced in a room. And Emily says there will be snacks provided. And they're going to be working on a script of Buffy the Vampire Slayer. So can you, what's in store for these people in this writer's intensive?
I'm going to change your question a little bit.
Go ahead.
What we're trying to do at the TSC is we're always trying to find new ways to get into the writing experience that are curious to writers, but they don't really have access to. So going back again to my example about Leonard Dick coming in and talking about what it's like to be in a room with J.J. Abrams and what it's like to be in a room with Robert Michelle King and, with David Shore, the idea was, how do we recreate that? How do we give people an idea what it's like to be in Emily Andrews' room or in Bruce Smith's room or whoever else chooses to do this session in the future? We want to try and recreate the writer's room as much as possible, both for showrunners to see how other showrunners are doing and for writers who are nervous or curious about it. You know, one of the funny things about the conference was, you talk about meeting people, a couple of years ago, not to keep talking about Glenn, but Glenn was here a couple of years ago, and he came up to me and he said, "Is that Bo Willimon over there?" And I said, "Yeah." He goes, "Can you introduce me?" I was like, "That's right, because that's what I do. I introduce the showrunner of The Walking Dead to the showrunner of House of Cards. That's that's my everyday activity." And so anyway, the three of us got together and we started talking, but it was amazing to hear them start talking because they don't talk.
Yeah.
They don't get to sit in each other's writer's rooms.
Right.
They don't know how that works. And so they would just sat down and just start talking about all those things. And so, you know, you imagine, like, the target market for this is professional screenwriters at all levels. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that's amazing about it is the speakers, if you look around carefully enough, are also coming to other people's sessions.
Okay.
Because they see the value in it. And so, you know, I'm always having speakers coming up to me and being like, "That was amazing. I got to go to this other section." I'm like, didn't you speak this morning? But they're still there. So so that's the idea. Is, you know, what's it like to be in Emily Andrews' room? So for all the showrunners in the room, they get a chance to see that. Mm-hmm. And all the aspiring writers, they get to see that. That's what we want to recreate. So what can they expect? The people that are going to go into the room with her on, I think, Thursday before the conference, we are going to videotape that, but they are going to break, I think, an act of Buffy the Vampire Slayer. And there'll be six writers, and there'll be Emily, and they're going to, you know, Emily's going to run the room the same way she would starting an episode of Lost Girl or Winona, but they're going to be breaking Buffy instead. This year, we're evolving it from last year. This year, we are going to edit that.
Oh.
And show probably 10 or 15 minutes of it.
Okay.
At the beginning of the session.
Okay.
So that people have an idea of what happened in that room.
Yeah.
Emily's going to talk a little about it, and then we're going to pull probably the final problem they tried to solve onto the stage so people can see how that worked as
Interesting.
Well.
Okay.
Bruce was amazing last year.
Yeah.
He came up to me before he went on stage and said, "I don't mind being your guinea pig," because he was the first time we'd done it. And you know, unfortunately, the way it worked out, by the time he had recapped everything he needed to recap for the audience, we had eaten up too much of the time for the session. And so we wanted to eliminate that, which is one of the reasons we're doing a show that has, you know, people have a familiarity with already, and we're going to take the full day and cut it down to 10 minutes so they have some insight into what already happened in the room. And we're also going to lose the portion at the end where they have to pitch the network exec because, while it was very valuable to have Tom Hastings on stage last year, we felt the value that people saw in that session was really seeing the writer's room at work. So that's what they should expect. They should expect some insight into how Emily runs a room and how to behave in that room and how to contribute.
I'll talk a little bit about the Telefilm New Voices Award. It seems like it's an incredible opportunity for somebody that's kind of breaking into the business. What kind of doors does that open for somebody?
I think it opens a lot of doors. Again, we've had a great success record with the people that have won this award in the past. They've all, I see them around town all the time. They've all got things going on in their careers.
Yeah.
I think what they should expect is just access. I mean, they get a lunch with Telefilm, a lunch with the NSI.
Right.
They get a pass to the conference. And they just, you know, what it does is I think it provides them with the ability to come to the conference And instead of just introducing themselves as, you know, Joey Bagadone, it's screenwriter, it's Joey Bagadone, it's Telefilm Voice Award.
Right.
And every producer is going to be interested in a new voice. And so, those people were announced, the winners were announced on Friday.
Mm-hmm.
But they'll all get more attention. They'll all be, you know, producers will want to know who they are. People are going to want to read their scripts. And so I think it's a great way for a beginning screenwriter to kind of get access to the TSC and some of the things that TSC offers.
This is a little bit of a kind of a beginner's writer's question, but how important is it for people that want to get into this industry to go to the Canadian Film Center or the NSI and take their courses? Is that pretty much a no-brainer?
No-brainer. If you can get into the CFC or the NSI, I love both of those organizations. I'll do anything I can for them.
Mm-hmm.
They do great work finding, training, developing, and putting confidence into some of the greatest talent this country has produced. I mean, the CFC and NSI's records are both extraordinary for these programs. So, yeah, if you can, A, apply all the time, mm-hmm. get in, and if you can get in, take advantage of everything those programs have to offer.
Now, before we kind of start wrapping up, I have a couple of questions to go, but is there anything specifically about the TSC that you wanted to mention that I didn't ask about?
I don't know. I mean, is there anything specific? I don't think so. I hope that, you know, again, I think we talked about this before we started recording, but, you know, I think a lot of people have been burned by screenwriting conferences in the past.
Mm.
By things where, you know, they went to 3 101 beginner level conferences in a row, and by the third conference they were like, you know what, conferences don't have anything to offer me anymore. If there's one thing I hope that's getting out there as we continue to build this event, is that it is not that conference.
Mm-hmm.
This is a screenwriting conference for professionals,
mm-hmm.
with an elevated level of discussion and something that professionals should be proud of. I mean, the ultimate dream for the Toronto Screenwriting Conference is that screenwriters from London, New York, Los Angeles, Toronto, Vancouver, Halifax, all over, just mark it on their calendar. If you're a screenwriter in the world, you need to be in Toronto on this weekend, because it's where you're going to find out what they're doing around the world in screenwriting, and a chance to talk to your peers from different coasts, from different continents, and to learn about it. I mean, to me, that's just... I think that's the most exciting idea. I think it'd be super great. But I do understand that some people still have to get over the idea that there is some takeaway from it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if you talk to people that have come, if you talk to people that have been there before, if you look at the lineup we have, I think people will see there is a lot of value there for, I would argue, a pretty reasonable price compared to other screenwriting events in the world.
Yeah. So a couple of, just to have a little bit of fun, you already mentioned, not that we weren't already having fun, but these are a little bit more,
I'm so serious today. You got very serious.
No, it's fine. So we were talking about The Shield before, and obviously that, you said, I think that's your favorite show of all time. Were there any television shows, movies, or anything that just kind of struck you and kind of led you, because we mentioned before we started recording that you were originally a screenwriter, or you were in film school anyway. So was there a television show or film or something that grabbed you when you were a kid and took
sure.
you in a direction?
Yeah. I have a couple of examples.
Okay.
First is, I would tell you that I was 9 years old in the summer of 1977.
Okay.
Now,
I know. Go ahead. Go ahead. Yeah.
I don't know if there was a more perfect age to see Star Wars in a world before Star Wars existed than 9 years old. And I remember very vividly sitting in that theater, watching those words fly by, and then seeing the coolest thing I'd ever seen, this ship come out of the top right-hand corner of the screen, just being like, oh my God, this is amazing. Oh my God, I love this movie so much.
Yeah.
And honestly, one of the things I think is one of the greatest cinematic moments in history, George Lucas followed it up with a bigger spaceship. Like, not just kind of bigger, like way bigger.
Yes.
Takes up 2/3 of the screen.
Yes.
And really immerses yourself. You immersed me in that world, and I was gone. Like, at that point, that was it. I was going to be in the movie industry from that point on. And so that was hugely influential on me. And, you know, back in the 80s, when movies were not as accessible, you know, you had to go to the theaters, or, you know, you said you used to work at TV Guide. TV Guide arriving on a Thursday afternoon at my house when I was a kid was a great time for me because I'd immediately open it up and flip through and highlight when Westworld was going to be on.
Right.
Oh, Elwe Yost is doing Citizen Kane. I've never seen Citizen Kane, you know, and I get to highlight the, my dad would get the TV Guide all marked up. And, and so I was really into it. And you had to make an effort back then. Like, you had to make such an effort to see these movies and find them. And I think, you know, that really just kind of cemented in me my desire to be in the industry. Then, very almost, I don't know what you would call this, by fate, my parents, before all the corporate aspect entered, my parents opened a mom-and-pop video store.
Wow.
In 1984, before there was a Blockbuster, before there was any big chains, and so suddenly I had this whole library of movies.
Yeah.
And my mom would be like, I gotta order some movies this week, what should I get? And I, you know, 15 years old, was deciding what our neighborhood was gonna watch.
Amazing.
And so I got to do that. So, and so movies always, always, always have had a huge influence on me. I'm a huge fan of, obviously, I was a teenager for the John Hughes years.
Yes.
So that was a big thing for me. And I, you know, I like to think I became an adult at the right time and saw a lot of movies as a young adult that were, you know, like, I didn't understand The Big Chill, but I knew there was something there that I should probably watch again in 5 years. That kind of stuff. So movies were a big thing. But TV is a funnier thing because TV wasn't great when I was a kid.
Yeah.
I mean, I grew up on Gilligan's Island.
Yep.
I grew up on Brady Bunch. I grew up on all those syndicated sitcoms. Rockford Files, Marcus Welby, MD, all of which were enjoyable.
Mm-hmm.
But again, I think I was exactly the right age for Hill Street Blues.
Okay. Yep.
And Hill Street Blues, I don't know. I just actually went back and rewatched the first four episodes. That show still holds up today.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if anyone, you'd have to really be a student of it or to talk to someone who was at the right age at the time to understand the impact that Hill Street Blues was on. The idea that there was, you know, 10 main characters, that Dana J. Travanti only had like 4 minutes of screen time
an
episode.
Yes.
Is insane.
Yes.
Now, today it seems totally normal.
Right.
But back then, it was so landmark. So Hill Street Blues was a big gateway for me into more complex drama and different characters and all of that. It sounds so stereotypical, but you know, again, I just have to go by being the right age. Cheers.
Mm-hmm.
Came out of reading TV Guide. Mm-hmm. You know, I would not have watched Cheers had it not been for TV Guide. And TV Guide saying, this show is going to be great.
Right.
And I forced my whole family to watch it. My dad loved it. My mom loved it. And so in that first season where they finished like 63rd on the network, but they only had like, you know, 18 viewers, seven of them were from my family.
Right.
We watched it every week and then everyone else caught on. So that was fun. Sorry, it's fine. ER.
Oh, that yes.
Again, ER still stands at the test of time, and I think people, everyone should watch at least the first five seasons of ER. I would say, I miss The Simpsons. Again, age thing, I was the wrong age for The Simpsons. Mm-hmm. I was not living in the country at the time. Certainly The Shield, and most recently, Parenthood.
Wow.
Parenthood, to me, you're always sad when a show ends, but with Parenthood, it wasn't about a show ending, it was about a family leaving my life.
Right.
And I haven't felt that way about characters in a long time. I was, you know, Vic Mackey, I loved Vic Mackey, I was compelled by that character, and I'll say The Shield's the best one-hour drama
right.
for a long time.
Right.
But I'd love to know what's going on with the Bravermans right now.
I'm the same way about Friday Night Lights. I want to know what Coach and Tammy Taylor are doing. Another Jason Kadam show. I mean, he just creates these characters that you actually care about, and you want to catch up with them 5 or 10 years later and say, what are they doing now?
Yeah.
What's Tim Riggins doing?
And Netflix makes us hopeful that it'll happen.
That's true. That's true.
I have all my chips down on a Parenthood, four movies, like one movie a year maybe or something. I don't know. If anyone knows anyone that can make that happen, I'd be happy to talk to them.
Well, thanks to Glenn Coburn and Greg David for sharing their conversation with us here on the TV ABCs podcast. You know, it's one of those opportunities where it's great because Greg has all of these chances where he goes out into the field, and I know we just talked with each other. He's starting to bring a recorder around, so hopefully we're going to start to get some more of Greg's conversations with some of the writers, directors, actors, and the people behind the scenes that he talks to on a regular basis, maybe even some of the stars of your favorite show coming to a show near you, coming to a podcast episode near you. If you would like to support us here at the TV ABCs podcast, you can go onto Patreon. That's patreon.com/TV_EH. And if you'd like to, give us maybe $1 an episode or $1 a month, however you want to do it. Just share a value for value model with us. If you think it's worth it, you can always listen. You can still always listen for free. But if you want to, you can certainly do that and help us out. You can find TVA on Twitter at TV_EH. You can find all of the other podcasts that I do at AnthonyMarco.com. And you can find me on Twitter at Anthony Marco. And you can find Greg on Twitter at Greg_David. We can find our recordings in the strangest places these days, can't we? That wraps up another episode for this week. And now back to your regularly scheduled programming.